What a year, huh? 2020 is one for the ages. Now, technically speaking, every year is one for the ages, but 2020 will be remembered as a year that simultaneously brought parts of life to a halt and rapidly accelerated other areas of life. Now, one thing seems fairly certain. Even when things get back to quote-unquote normal, lasting change has already happened. And so to wrap up the year, I want to share with you what we've learned in 2020. Thank you to everybody for listening. My name is Dan Wunderlich. I'm a United Methodist pastor. And I want to first say that I hope you enjoyed our last two episodes with Catherine Price. It was an absolute blast to interview her. And even with the extended lengths of those two episodes, I kept the conversation going with Catherine long after the recording ended because she just had so much good stuff to share. And we will definitely have her on again. And some of the resources that we mentioned in those interviews will be publishing soon if they haven't already. And if you'd like to hear about them and other great free resources, be sure to sign up for the MyCom email list. To find resources or to sign up for that newsletter, head to resourceumc.org, hover over agencies in the menu bar, and then click on communications. We're going to start with five things that you, our audience, have learned. Colleagues of ours have shared with me things that we have learned. And so the first one is seeing each platform as unique space and opportunity. This comes from Michael Madden. He's the pastor of Cotton Hill UMC in Atwood, Illinois. And he wrote, "The church has put too much emphasis on in-person Sunday morning services. Credit is due for the effort to shift to online or hybrid formats so quickly, but going forward, we'll have to do more than simply taking Sunday morning and putting it online. We'll have to work to understand how content is consumed on different platforms and adapt the way we do things." Michael, I think you are so right. Despite the fact that every platform copies each other's features, we see you Twitter fleets, you're just Instagram stories, which are really just Snapchat stories. Every platform still has its own culture, even if they share and copy one another's features. And likely within your church and community, different demographics use different platforms or even use the same platforms quite differently. So the days of scheduling one piece of content to just hit every platform, those days are long gone. And that really comes into focus when you're relying on social content to be the primary point of contact. The second thing we learned in 2020 is that church online doesn't just have to be church online. It kind of ties into what Michael shared before, but Amanda Dumas from Wesley at UCF, shout out to our awesome United Methodist Campus Ministries. Amanda wrote this, "We learned how to adjust the normal worship service format since we didn't find it quite as engaging online. Instead of the usual announcements, songs, sermon, songs format, we did things like a cooking show where our pastor cooked and shared the word and other creative ways to keep people engaged virtually. We're still thinking of how to incorporate the creativity of the summer of 2020 into our services now that we're meeting back in person." And again, going back to Michael's point, every platform has things that work and things that don't on them. And the chances that a video feed of what worked in person when in the room with people, chances that that's just going to work right out of the box on Facebook, YouTube, or pretty much anywhere else is pretty low. And even if it's the same people watching who had been in the room with you when you were previously open, that doesn't mean it's going to hit quite the same way. You know, it may be a source of comfort or familiarity, particularly earlier on in the pandemic. It might have been nice and comforting for folks to see the same space and the same faces and hear the same worship elements. But likely, I would imagine you noticed, as I did, that engagement drops over time. And I think Amanda and Wesley at UCF are on to something as they start to think about how to take what was a purely online experience and how they can shape that into the way that they do worship now that they're resuming in-person gatherings, particularly if when you resume in person, you're going to continue streaming because there are folks who can't or won't be able to return for a while. The question is, are we going to continue to care about those people and make sure that they feel cared about? Are we going to continue to serve them, or do they just simply become a fly on the wall who has to watch what everyone else is doing once they're back in person? Point number three also comes from Amanda at Wesley at UCF, and that is that using social media as social media and not simply broadcast media. She said, "We learned how to use social media better as ministry to connect with people while in quarantine, etc., rather than just promoting our ministry events. We talk about meeting people where they are all the time, and in 2020, more than ever, that was scrolling through Facebook and Instagram." Now, to give her credit, she wrote Insta. I feel like I'm too old to call Instagram Insta. But Amanda, you do you, and I'm going to do me. This ties into an episode from earlier this year called Everyone Knows and No One Cares, where I belabored the point that we can't simply give people times and dates and locations and ask them to care and to show up. That's just not the problem we face. Knowledge, awareness of what's going on is not the primary barrier to people joining you. When we use our social platforms to simply broadcast this kind of information and not actually engage and connect, those channels will dry up. I'm sure you've experienced it, and if you haven't, you will. The actual relationships wither, but the algorithms respond as well. If people stop or never start interacting with our content, the platforms will eventually start pushing us further down their feed. Now, the good news is, and I'm sure this is something you've noticed, I have noticed that it does not take much engagement to bring an account or a person or an organization back up the feed. All it takes is one or two interactions for someone to show back up early in the list of Instagram stories or early in your Facebook feed. You like one post, make one comment, watch one story, and suddenly that account shows up more. You watch a couple of videos from a specific channel on YouTube, and they're all of a sudden on the front page. And so don't worry and don't delay. Don't think that you've got to come up with some grand strategy and build up to it and then launch it later. Start doing things that engage now, and you can always tweak over time. The next thing our community learned in 2020 is that constraints lead to creativity. This comes from Jackie Carpenter at Morrison Chapel UMC in Kingsport, Tennessee. Jackie wrote, "We learned that ministry occurs outside the building. We launched two local mission-focused ministries and discovered that seeing the gospel in action has a far more reaching impact than simply quoting a verse. They started a food ministry and a ministry that provided diapers, wipes, formula, baby food, and clothing to families in their community." And I have to say, Jackie, I love and admire your honesty here. You know, our denominational mission statement is to make disciples of Jesus Christ for the transformation of the world. And so many of our local churches either use that as our mission statement, or we use some version of love God and love people. And yet, so much of what we focus on, both in ministry and in church marketing, is to try to get people in the door for one event 1 hour a week. And I know I fall into that trap myself. But it sounds to me like the closing of the physical doors in Morrison Chapel pushed them through doors that were wide open in their community and have led to ministry and connection that really, truly has the opportunity to transform their community. So bravo to you, Jackie, and to all other churches that have used the shutting down of their facilities and the closing of their physical sanctuaries to push them out into ministry in the community. And our last community learning comes from Ryan Dunn, who's the Minister of Online Engagement at Rethink Church, and he co-hosts another awesome UM Communications podcast called the Compass Podcast. If you haven't checked that out yet, be sure to check that out. But Ryan wrote this about what he learned in 2020. He said, "I've learned to do fewer things, but do them better. I see that happening in our churches too. We're being forced to prune so many activities that I think it's made us hyper aware of the things we do that are actually bearing fruit, whether that be in a spiritual or mundane sense." Thank you, Ryan. And again, great work on the Compass Podcast. It's an honor and privilege to be a fellow UMC podcaster with you. But Ryan points to this technique of pruning to bear more fruit, which is, of course, a very real gardening technique. But of course, it's also a really great biblical illustration. It's a metaphor used in Scripture. And in the church, out of respect for tradition, respect for sunk costs, both financial and person hours and effort, and perhaps even in avoidance of uncomfortable conversations, we can let a lot of ministries, programs, or annual events take up resources far beyond their fruitfulness, far beyond the time that they really probably should have ended. Now, in a sermon this summer, I shared about a rose garden that was in the backyard of a house my wife and I used to rent. When we moved in, it was this massive, overgrown mess. You couldn't even tell what it was. It had literally weaved itself up into the trees, and it was just this giant thorny mess. It was all green. There weren't even any flowers. Once I figured out they were roses, I cut them from tree canopy height all the way down to about 12 or 18 inches. And the next spring, the bushes exploded with flowers. You know, it can be difficult in the work of the church to identify what is producing the most fruit or what has the potential to produce the most fruit if given the proper resources. And of course, it can be even harder to end beloved or long-running programs. But this hard work is worth it. And this is perhaps the best opportunity we're going to have for a long time to carry out this kind of work as patterns and routines have been interrupted and we slowly build things back. Now, we're going to take a quick break, but don't go away. After the break, I'll share with you what I learned in 2020 and leave you with a pep talk.
Are you still serving your local church in a leadership role? Ministry would suffer without dedicated members and leaders like you. We want to continue to support your vital work. Please update your information with United Methodist Communications to ensure that you'll receive the latest information about services and resources, such as grants and training opportunities, relevant to your leadership role at church. Update your information at umc.org/update. Act now and receive a complimentary registration for the Digital Media for Ministry online course, a $19.99 value. Thank you. And now back to our program.
Welcome back. And just to recap our community learnings from 2020, we're seeing each platform as a unique space and opportunity. That came from Pastor Michael Madden. Church online doesn't just have to be church online. That came from Amanda Dumas at Wesley at UCF. Amanda also taught us that using social media does not have to be simply broadcast media, but we can use it as social media. Constraints lead to creativity was a massive learning for Jackie Carpenter in the community at Morris Chapel UMC. And then fellow UM Communications podcaster Ryan Dunn taught us that biblical concept of pruning to bear more fruit. Well, what did I, Dan, learn in 2020? The first thing I want to talk about is the idea that there are no more universally shared experiences. You know, it's been a long time since preachers could make a pop culture reference and be sure that the majority of their congregation would even know what they're talking about. With virtually unlimited options for entertainment and how to spend our time, or even how to receive and understand the news and what's going on in the world, we have lost the universally shared experiences. I think the pandemic has only reinforced this because even though this is something that literally everyone in the world is going through, we're all having vastly different experiences. Some people are bored out of their mind and have watched practically everything of interest on Netflix, cleaned their living spaces thoroughly at least 10 times, and learned some random new skill like bread baking. Other people like myself have a 2-year-old who was home 24/7 for 5 months, and I would have given anything to have the energy to stay up and watch something on Netflix after my daughter went to bed. And even among parents of young children, there's a difference between whether they went back to school or daycare in person or they stayed home. Some people are so incredibly lonely, and others long for just a couple hours of silence and space. You see, what binds us is no longer any one universally shared experience, but it is the human experience. And the way that we connect with one another isn't saying, oh, I experienced that exact same thing, but rather finding the empathy inside of us to connect with others, even if their experience isn't ours. Secondly, slightly more practical, I was reminded of the importance of repetition. Just because virtually everything we do is online now and thus archived forever, I mean, you could be listening to this episode in 2025, 2026. You may be a brand new church communicator in 2030 who wasn't even old enough to remember the pandemic in 2020. But just because things are available online forever does not mean everyone's going to go back and catch the things they missed. As the frequency of church attendance has dropped over time, and the last time I saw it, it was a couple years ago, but the last time I saw it, it was around 1.7 times per month. Repetition gets more important because everyone isn't in the room every week. You have to say it 2 to 3 or 4 times in a row to ensure that everyone heard it at least once. Well, the same, of course, is true, and the problem may be even getting worse now that things are primarily online. There was some research from the Barna Group that captured a 4-week snapshot over the summer summer during quarantine, and it said that nearly half of self-identified Christians had not attended a worship service at all in those 4 weeks. And of those who did, a sizable portion watched churches that weren't even the ones they attended in person. I also know from my own behavior that it's just as easy, if not easier, to tune out when I'm watching something online than I am in person. Even if people go back to catch a replay or watch something on demand, they can fast forward and skip parts they don't want to see. Even with sermon themes and illustrations, I found myself repeating things to drive them home. And I think we should begin to adopt the approach that some worship leaders humorously but also very seriously share. Remember that when you're starting to get sick of a song, your congregation is just starting to learn it. This next thing may just be personal to me, but I would love to hear from you if you're struggling with this as well. And that is, medium length content just does not do it for me. I want things that are either shorter or a lot longer. I have no time for medium length content. I either want a show or a podcast or a YouTube video to be 15 or 20 minutes maximum. You know, the shorter the better, or I want something that is worth a longer investment where I have to block out time, at a specific time later. I've noticed that preachers who typically preach for 30 to 45 minutes in person are talking about how online they've shifted down to 20 or 25 minutes, and that's connecting better with their congregations during the time when they're online. Business and marketing writer Seth Godin has a new book out called The Practice. It has 219 chapters. The book itself is just under 300 pages. Some chapters are a couple of pages and some are just a handful of sentences. In this book, there are no wasted words. The content is so distilled that there's enough, even in one of those couple sentence chapters, to just sit with it for a while. I also know that when I sit down with a book like this, I can choose how long I want to be there. Now, of course, we always have the choice for how long we're going to be there, but it's nice to give people natural breakpoints, because if we don't, they're going to be choosing to bail or change the channel or click on another tab when things are starting to drag and you haven't even wrapped up your point. It certainly is harder to make shorter work, but I believe it's worth it. The last thing is kind of more personal, and hopefully we've all had personal learnings in 2020 and not just professional learnings, but that is that stress and anxiety and focus and workload can mask symptoms and deeper issues that are going on below the surface. This is something that I heard identified by a couple of guests on the Brené Brown podcast. These two sisters, Emily and Amelia Nagoski, had written a book about burnout, and they talked about how the parts of the nervous system that tell our body that we're sick are the same parts that carry the message and noise of stress and exhaustion. And so when we're overwhelmed by stress, that can actually monopolize the bandwidth within our central nervous system. Maybe this has happened to you. It always happened to me. I would never seem to get sick during school, but I would always get sick on Thanksgiving break or Christmas break. And the truth is, I was sick. I just didn't feel it or notice it until after the stress of school went away. And of course, this happens to adults too. Perhaps you've had that major letdown and crash right after Christmas Eve services or something like that, or right after Easter. Well, we have been in 8 months of elevated levels of stress. And particularly for the kinds of people who listen to this podcast, our people, our tribe, the volunteers, the staff, and pastors whose responsibilities often include any and everything online, we've had more on our plate than ever before. And the truth is, there will eventually come a time when either the stress and exhaustion start to come down, or the things that are bubbling below the surface will become so strong that they break through that noise. And in either case, it could go well, but it also has the potential to go really, really poorly. We need to remind ourselves that things like Sabbath are God-commanded gifts, and they are gifts for us. And we take them not because the work is done, but because God has designed us and called us to do so. Learning to listen to our bodies, listen to our emotions, listen to our spirit, certainly listening to the Holy Spirit. Learning how to clear the channels of stress enough to hear what's really going on inside of us. It's as important as finishing that one project or learning that new skill or tweaking that one video or layout. And actually, it's far more important than finishing that one project or learning that new skill or tweaking that one video or layout. We need to tell ourselves this. We need to remind ourselves that as important as our work is, taking the time to do these things, the things that God designed us as human beings to do, is going to make everything else better. And that leads me to the pep talk I want to leave you with here at the end of 2020. We are recording this toward the end of November, just before Thanksgiving. You'll hear it a couple weeks after this. But if you think back to then, we've just heard in the news promising results about a potential vaccine. We've got two different companies that are working on vaccines. Who knows? By the time you hear this, it should hopefully be further down the road. But one of the CEOs said, you know, if we all mask up and we get this thing distributed properly and efficiently, we should hopefully be back to normal next winter, which is a calendar year away from when I'm recording this and when you're listening to this, if you're following along in real time. Which means we potentially have more of this ahead of us than we have behind us. Now, there was a lot of uncertainty behind us. We have more clarity now, but that is still a long time. And the question that we may find ourselves wrestling with is, how are we going to get through this? How am I going to get through this? How is my family going to get through this? How is our church going to get through this? And so the verse that I've been spending a lot of time with, of course, comes from Philippians chapter 4, where Paul writes, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. But I've actually really been leaning into the translation from the Common English Bible that says, I can endure all these things through the power of the one who gives me strength. I joke that this is the verse that launched 1,000 ships and so many of them wrecked, because we tell ourselves, I can do anything as long as I'm a Christian and do it in the name of Christ. And that's not what Paul is talking about. I don't need to give you a lesson on exegesis and how to read the Bible in context. You all know how to do that. And so hopefully you know and remember that this message is about Paul talking about enduring the challenges of life, enduring the struggles of life. But it's the second half of that verse that has really caught me lately. You know, I had been so focused on making sure that my congregation and the people that I pastor understood that this was endure and not do. And I had overlooked that the second half of this verse is obviously the key and the most important thing. I can endure all these things through the power of the one who gives me strength, through Jesus Christ, through Christ, not near Christ, through Christ, not on behalf of Christ, through Christ, not just in the name of Christ, through Christ, not just in a building dedicated to Christ, through Christ, not just as an employee of an organization that works for Christ. We will be able to endure these things. Our churches can make it. We can make it, but we can only endure through Christ. And we need to remind ourselves of this truth. And so thank you so much for joining us this year. Thank you for hanging in there with us through all the craziness. I hope that we have been of service to you. I hope that the episodes from this year have been, I hope that they have been practically helpful for you. But if nothing else, I hope that it has helped to hear colleagues of yours, myself, the guests that we've had on this show, walking this road with you, praying for you, encouraging you, facing the same struggles, struggling with the same challenges. I pray that this has been helpful. And of course, as always, we love hearing from you. And so as we turn the page from 2020 and head into 2021, I want to know what you're focusing on. Are there any changes to your workload or workflow that you want to make in the new year? How are you taking time to connect with God and refill spiritually so that you can do the practical ministry of church marketing and communications well? You can email us at podcast@umcom.org, and we just might share your answers on a future episode, as we did with folks that wrote in to us for this episode. And don't forget, you can use that email, podcast@umcom.org, to share what you've learned from this crazy year. We can't wait to hear from you. Finally, if you found this podcast to be helpful, and you'd like to make sure that other church communicators like yourself find this resource, the two biggest things you can do are to share this episode with your friends and colleagues and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, or whatever service you're listening to us on right now. Thanks again for listening to the MyCom Church Marketing Podcast.